Thank you. So the first question is, should we send or not send the error report? I have never sent an error report, I'll let you know. Thanks for coming, folks. This is a little bit of a different topic for me. Most of the presentations that I make have a fair amount of numbers in them, or at least have a real strong quantitative basis to them. But I wanted to take on a very different topic this time around, and that is the topic of team chemistry in baseball, or clubhouse chemistry. And part of the reason is because I feel like I do have a dialogue with the analytics, statistical analysis community, and I just think my concern is that, and this is not to everyone in that community by any means, but there are certain people in that community who subscribe to the theory that if you can't measure it, it doesn't count. And I'm trying to present some rationale to dispel perhaps that view, if someone should hold that view. And I'm not saying you can't measure team chemistry, but I have nothing on that today. I'm going to really talk about it from a conceptual framework, and also the dozens of interviews that I've done over the last year with players, managers, and coaches, past players as well as active current players. So, you know, the sort of the start of this is that many people that I've talked to in baseball believe with great conviction that the chemistry that a team has a real impact on its results. Yet at the same time, as I said, I think that concept is somewhat undervalued in the analytics community. And there's certainly analysts who would believe this as well, but it's not as universal as it is, say, outside the analytics community. And there's really been no in-depth analysis available. And so I wanted to also note that this has been studied extensively in the business world. And so what I was able to do was draw on some of the research that's been done in the military and in the business world, as well as my own personal experiences being in a corporate environment where team dynamics and team functioning is a very important part of getting things accomplished. So the objective of the study, this is the agenda. I'm going to give you the objective, talk about my three-pronged approach, and define team chemistry, because I think that's an important place to start, and also some of the key questions that I raise, which, why do I think it's so important in baseball? I think there's a bit of a fallacy that because baseball can be reduced in some way to the individual batter-pitcher confrontation, that for that reason, it actually lessens the dependence on team chemistry. It's not like the guy has to pass me the ball, so we've got to have a relationship. Well, I'm going to make the case that I think the individual batter-pitcher confrontation is even a greater reason why team chemistry is important. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what I think the payoff is in terms of what I consistently got feedback from people, and then a logic flow as to why what they told me is plausible. Look at the life cycle, although I don't have time to get into this in much depth today, but essentially there is a life cycle to the role that a player plays in team chemistry. You know, it's sort of a little bit like Maslow's hierarchy in the sense that you want to be a good teammate, but you don't want to subjugate that to making the team, because if you're not on the team, it doesn't really matter how much of a teammate you are. So you're not as focused, perhaps, of being a supportive teammate when you're in that phase of your career where you're trying to establish whether you're going to be a big leaguer. Why I think it's more important today than it was 20 years ago, and a model for how it works, and then some preliminary conclusions. So again, my goal is simply to better understand it, define it, create a vocabulary around it, or at least begin to create one, and develop a conceptual model of how it works and create some hypotheses to test. My three-pronged approach involved interviewing players and coaches. I did 20 hours of interviews and still hope to continue to do more. Some of them were many people who were passionate about this topic, who are inside the game. And The second is to survey the current literature in terms of what's going on in the business world in terms of this research, as well as some military studies, which I'll comment on and talk about. And then finally, draw on my own personal experiences. I've been part of high-performing, high-functioning teams in the corporate world, and I've been part of dysfunctional teams. I like to think I wasn't the reason for those dysfunctional teams. You never know, though, my opinion. But I have been part of teams that weren't functioning very effectively, and I had a good sense of how and why our results fell short. So here's my definition. What I say team chemistry, what I mean is the degree to which players are invested in their teammates and embrace a shared set of team-oriented goals, including a willingness to make sacrifices for the good of the team. That's the definition, essentially, of team chemistry. Think of it as, the interpersonal relationships and interpersonal dynamics of an organization or of any team. So in talking with players, managers, coaches, and most of my conversations have been with players, I would say split between active and former, perhaps a little more on the former. Altogether, I would say 14 or 15 principals that I spoke with who are active in the game. There's a strong level of conviction that chemistry has made a tangible difference in their careers and in the performance of the teams they're playing on. And their feeling was that support from teammates was an integral part of success. And this really relates to the fact that, it has to do with creating a learning environment in the organization and on the team. And just the dynamic, and I'll get into a little more deeply, but the dynamic that occurs when two teammates or three or four or a group of teammates really feel like they can work effectively together and that the organization is behind them as well. Which leads to the last point on this page, which is that the front office and the manager are key, because in many ways the manager sets the tone. The manager himself cannot control and create team chemistry, but he can be the catalyst for it and pave the way for it. Sometimes it will happen in spite of the manager, but oftentimes the manager creates the environment. And, we'll get into it, but some of the tenets of that are open communication, letting players know where they stand, transparency. Those are the kinds of things that lead to positive dynamics across players and between players and their manager. One of the examples that I got from a player who was on the world champion Red Sox last year was that the Red Sox did a tremendous job of really connecting right from the front office through John Farrell right on down to the players and creating an environment where right even up to the family room. Now think about this for a second. The room that the team creates, an environment they create for the team's family members, immediate family members and close friends, to come to the ballpark and experience the game, wait for them while they're in the clubhouse and so forth before they leave. And he told me that he had never seen such painstaking detail where they interviewed players, solicited their input in creating this family room. The family room was so well received by his spouse and children that he no longer felt like he had the pressure at home where he was torn between a very demanding job, which involves a lot of travel, and his family, to the point where his family would say, go to the ballpark, we'll just see you there later. And he felt such a release of tension and stress because he didn't have that dual responsibility hanging over him and splitting his attention. He said he'd get to the park an hour and a half earlier every day. Now, he said, I never considered myself anyone. I never shirked responsibility. He said, but the fact that I got to the park an hour and a half earlier, which gave me more time to look at film, which gave me more time to work out with my teammates, which gave me more time to sort of trade stories about the upcoming pitcher we're going to face that day, he said, in a strange way, having a great family room and creating that team dynamic made me a better baseball player. you know, it's hard for us sitting on the outside to make that kind of a link and connection, but he's sort of walking me through the chain of events that led to that. He said, I'm in the on-deck circle. He said, I'm not saying when I'm in the on-deck circle, I'm thinking a lot about what my, you know, about my, whether my wife is happy. He said, but I will tell you, I was absolutely distraction-free when I went to the ballpark. And it wasn't only because of the family room, but that played a big role in it. So, you know, in a corporate environment, some of the qualities of high-functioning teams, you know, accountability, trust, the willingness to engage in positive conflict, you know, and that's an important one. It's not lack of conflict or absence of conflict, because often the absence of conflict is a trait of a dysfunctional team, not a high-functioning team. It's the willingness to engage in positive conflict where there's a sincere willingness to get to a resolution, to discuss it openly, to have a give and take and have trade-offs be made. You know, that's an important trait of a high-performance team. Also, you know, proactively supporting team members and placing team goals ahead of personal goals. So this is what you would define, you know, if you look at the literature, and it varies, but these are some of the tenets of what would constitute a good team in a business environment. In a military environment, and let me first say that in no way am I equating combat to what goes on a ball field. However, you know, the stakes obviously are way, way higher, life and death in many cases. But at the same time, there are lessons that can be borrowed and learned and analogies that can be drawn from some of the same principles that create high-performing teams in combat. You know, one of the things that the research shows is that social cohesion of the small unit typically, so we'll call it the platoon, you know, that 10, 20, 30-person unit, often trumps any other factor, including patriotism, in motivating troops to go into combat. In fact, one of the interesting studies, going back to a study of World War II deserters, found that the single biggest cause or motivation for desertion wasn't fear, wasn't a lack of patriotism, it was the inability to assimilate into the small unit. So this whole notion of a cohesive small unit has a profound effect on the way people act within the military environment, particularly in a combat setting. You know, so one of the reasons why I've sort of come to buy into, and again, this is a hypothesis that perhaps can be tested, started to buy into the notion that in baseball, team chemistry is very important despite the batter-pitcher confrontation, is that number one, you have a longer season than anyone else. And I had players tell me consistently that if you don't get along with your teammates as much time as you spend with them, it's not 16 Sundays, okay, like it is in the NFL and training camp. It's you know, 6 full months plus 2 months of spring training and perhaps the postseason. It's 8-9 perhaps closer to 10 months a year that you are with these people day in and day out. And so from that standpoint alone, the absence of family for an extended period of time means that the team is your family. And, you know, there's a paradox here, too, that I want to throw out. And that paradox is that the loneliness and isolation of the batter-pitcher confrontation begs for a support system. So it's a paradox because, again, it's not like your teammate has to pass you the ball to make you effective, like it might be in basketball. But or there's an interdependence of the roles like there are in a basketball court in terms of the choreography, the movement even, or football. But because you're up there alone and because baseball is a game of constant adjustments, we just heard the presentation on game theory, going back and forth. And because those adjustments have to be made on a real-time basis from pitch to pitch and at bat to at bat, getting that, having that support system from your teammates, everything from emotional support after you've had a bad play to tangible advice. You know, think about it as the very basic level of, you know, I wouldn't even call it team chemistry, but sort of the basic level of obligation of being a teammate is when you're walking back after having struck out from the batter's box to the dugout, you're passing the on-deck circle and you're saying to the guy coming up, hey, watch that two-strike curveball because he'll bury it in the dirt, and it looks like, okay, that's one level. But another level is what goes on in the dugout between at-bats while another guy's up there. Either you're observing the game, but you're having a dialogue with your teammate and breaking down your at-bat, or going back and looking at video with one of your coaches. It's that interaction and support that you'll give one another. Not like I'm just in my own little world, but that support is one of those things that I think really leads to, is an evidence of team chemistry. So again, I don't think there's a lot of difference between between the characteristics in a business environment or a military environment and a baseball team environment that constitute good chemistry. One of those is playing, I want to talk a little bit more about is the shared purpose in playing for the team. I'm going to kind of power through some of this because we're really short on time. The role of the front office and the manager is one of setting the tone, open communication. You know, it's really important that the manager and the front office set a tone that we are on the same page. One of the most dysfunctional things for any baseball team is to know that there's conflict between the GM and the manager. It is a very unsettling thing. Some teams will respond by hunkering down and becoming a tight band of brothers themselves, but in other ways, it's a divisive force, and more often than not. And this notion of creating a higher purpose, perhaps, you know, for winning, but also playing for the city. I mean, you know, it's a situation where I think if you can bring it to the next level where you really are playing for the people who come to the games or playing for the legacy of what you're trying to do in the history of your franchise, those are things that help people become more of a team and are catalysts. I'm going to kind of skip through this to get to some further stuff because I guess I'll summarize it on the last page here. You can quickly read through some of these things. Just overall generalizations on the right of what would constitute a bad chemistry environment and on the left what would constitute a good chemistry environment. You know, and I think full accountability is one. It's critical. One of the guys told me that, one of his roles last year on the Red Sox was to pull teammates aside. He talked about a teammate who got pinch hit for and threw his helmet in the dugout when he was pulled. And, you know, he walked over to him and said, in the game, and said, it's not the way we do it here, you know. And he had a longer talk with him after the game. And I think... And he had the support, of course, of all of his teammates. And I think it had a real impact. And it made the young player realize that the game is bigger than him and that there's a shared purpose. And again, you know, they, of course, made it pay off last year with their results. This notion of, you know, creating a team mindset. One of the ways that teams really exploit this and do this effectively is they connect with the history of the organization. And a team, you know, a team that does this particularly well, and it's on my next slide, are the Cardinals. You know, the Cardinals have something called the Cardinal Way. The Cardinals are an organization that has a lot of their alumni from Stan Musial and Red Shandines in their day to more contemporary players who are still part of the St. Louis scene, who are there, who remind players the history of the franchise and give them a sense that this isn't just a job. There's something that came before them, and hopefully they are writing the next chapter of their franchise's history. And the notion that we're building something special, and there's this critical aspect. You know, I've heard stories about Carlos Beltran, who at this stage of his career has, you know, probably made as much money as he's ever going to need, but it's eluded him the championship. And so the role that he's played, I've heard this from several players, where he's becoming a person who is spending all of his time teaching other players, making them feel comfortable, telling them what it's like to be a big leaguer. One of the stories I have to tell you is that there was a club, an American League team last year, had a young pitcher who showed some promise, and he was, you know, just in his first year, second year, part of his second year, I guess. And they were playing the Tigers, and I think Scherzer was on the mound, and a veteran of 20 years sat next to this pitcher on the bench who wasn't pitching that game and said to him, you know, your stuff's as good as his. And the player looked at him and said, what are you talking about? He goes, your stuff is as good as his. You could be as good as this guy. Well, long story short, and I'm sure there's other factors that go into this, this player, this pitcher, started to reimagine and re-image his own career trajectory, started working a lot differently. His work habits changed, dedicating himself to the game. He was an all-star this year. So, and he, you know, this is a player that was telling him this, who had 20 years in the game, who was a highly trusted guy, who played that role in that organization. So, you know, again, I'm sure there was more to it than that, but I do believe that it's those kinds of things that can have a profound effect. I mentioned the Cardinals. You know, I just think they're a great story. They're continuously working on building something special. You know, one of the things, they have no tolerance for disruptions to team chemistry, particularly when La Russa was there. There were players who were moved out and moved out quickly and perhaps not at the best, at the highest trade value because they were moved out because the greater issue was the fact that they were a potential block to what the team was trying to do. It had nothing to do with their play on the field either. So I think those are important factors. The one last thing I'm going to do before I open it up to questions, and we'll only have a couple minutes for questions, is talk about this notion of confidence. And I'll tell you how I mean the word confidence. If you can create, like that veteran did with that pitcher, a sense that a player has control, real control and influence to affect a positive outcome, a very interesting thing happens to us as humans. We tend to invest highly and deeply and double down, if you will, in those situations. So confidence in this case is the belief that, yes, you have the opportunity to have a positive impact on an outcome. And so when you convince a player and help build his skill set, there's a snowball effect. What then happens is the player invests more, and it leads to actions like them working harder, re-imaging their career as a player, being more collaborative. It narrows the gap between their potential and their performance. And in many ways, many players told me it expanded their potential. It actually made them a better player when they started to believe in themselves because they looked at everything differently and they sought help. The reason why I think this is more important today, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, if you had great team chemistry, you know, perhaps a player would simply work harder. I don't know, maybe they would take more fielding practice, maybe they would study hitting a little bit more. But think about an empowered player in today's world. With all of the information we have available to us and the access to resources, if someone wants to improve their diet and nutrition, if someone is motivated, they can get a new workout regimen, they can do, you know, stretching exercises. And the way the list goes on of all the tools and techniques available to players today, they can watch video at a level that they couldn't years ago. So the reason why I think team chemistry is actually more important today is because it empowers players and there's more ways that a player can be empowered to make himself more effective and better. Really just a fraction of what I wanted to talk about, but I'm really right at the end, so I'm going to open it up to a couple of questions. David? A.J. Pruszynski was the subject of perhaps my famous, my favorite baseball quote. When Ozzie Guillen was asked, when he had A.J. as a player, he was asked about A.J. and he said, A.J.'s the kind of guy, if he's playing on the other team, you hate him. And if he's playing on your team, you hate him a little bit less. Which only Ozzie could say that. Yes.
I am in mind of the A's and chemistry. It seems frequently they say, if you win, you've got chemistry. If you lose, you don't have any chemistry. Obviously, they're winning. I think Crisp is the longest tenured A at 3 years, so there isn't any history there. Melvin seems to be giving a good hand. But I'm thinking about the things the A's do. They invent this Bernie Lean a couple years ago. I think they're the only team when a teammate hits a home run, a key home run, they run through a tunnel. I think that's good. And then about the players that are disruptive in our area, I know how happy many Giants players were that Barry Bonds left the team and was less disruptive. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, you know, I do know that Johnny Gomes has a reputation of being sort of at the very top of the list of great teammates. I had, you know, almost everybody I talked to who knew Johnny Gomes at all referenced him as the poster child for a great teammate. Brandon McCarthy's talked about it at past Sabre events, what Johnny Gomes meant to the Oakland A's. And interestingly enough, they just brought him back for the stretch run here. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, everybody's got a different opinion. I've heard of players who in different situations have been good teammates when they were bad teammates in other situations. So I'm not saying it's an intrinsic trait. I think it's more situational.
Hi, I've been thinking about chemistry myself the last couple of years. I have this non-working hypothesis, non-working because I haven't actually been working on it, in that I think most major league players and maybe even a lot of career minor leaguers could be major league all-stars if they ended up in the right system with the right kind of coaches. Maybe some guys need their egos massaged a little more and other guys are a little more command and control. You know, but if they ended up with the right coaches and they were receptive to certain coaches' input, they might work harder, become major league all-stars. Do you think there's any way to quantify that?
You know, good question. I mean, it's probably a longer topic than we have time for right now. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, let's put it that way, okay? I would not rule it out. And by the way, team chemistry is very easy to measure, okay? The impact of team chemistry on winning is a whole different story. But if you want to just measure the, you know, the social climate, the health of that climate within a clubhouse, it's simple. I was measuring organizational health monthly at Pepsi 23 years ago. You know, we had an organizational health survey. We could see when we rolled out a new product, or the health survey, the organizational health went up. When we had a product failure, it went down, and so forth. So that's easy to measure. It's the connection to winning is the tough part. Yes.
Did you get any sense talking to Red Sox players in terms of winning for the city, that the response to the Boston Marathon bombing that the Red Sox team had, that that had an impact on them winning last year?
You know, it's a very good question. It actually never came up, so I'm sort of silent on the topic, but it's a very interesting question. The other thing I do want to mention last to close is that, you know, there's always this question of chicken and egg, right? And I've heard people many times say, well, sure, when you're winning, it's great. It's easy to have team chemistry. To a person, for what it's worth, 14, 15 people is not a large sample size, but to a person, there was a strong belief that while, yes, there is a circular argument here, a two-way street, it is much stronger that chemistry is the catalyst for winning than winning is the catalyst for chemistry, point one. Point two, there have been some corporate business studies that suggest exactly the same thing. That strong organizational health, when you adjust for a team's product mix, organization's company's product mix, and their quality of their products and their pricing and so forth, has more of an impact on organizational financial performance than financial performance does back to health. Although it is a two-way street, like two-thirds impact going one direction, one-third impact coming back the other way. Well, that's all we have time for. Thanks so much for your attention.